today we're beginning this kind of unpacking of both the Satipatthana Sutta and the Lojong a little bit more. And today we're going to be focusing on the body. So this is the first foundation in the Satipatthana Sutta. But before we go into that, I'd just like to clarify something from yesterday where I feel I was not as mindful as I could have been or as empathetic as I could have been. And this is when I was talking about the use of images and I showed images, and I'm aware there may be people here who can't see the screen for one reason, maybe visually impaired, maybe find it difficult to look at the screen. And I didn't describe the images. So when I use images again, I'll make an effort to remember to describe them. So if you are visually impaired, you can still obviously benefit from the impact. And just to say that if images are difficult for you, either because you're visually impaired or any other reason, then I think all the principles I was talking about yesterday can apply to the other senses. If you're looking for a kind of non-conceptual way of exploring these teachings or any teachings, you could find pieces of music. That would be so interesting. You know, what would be the pieces of music for each of these 7 points of mind training? What would be touch? You could find different textures to evoke that, you know, bringing adversity onto the path. That could be very interesting to do with touch, you know, find something that's maybe a little bit rough, but when you relate to it in a certain way, it becomes more pleasant. You know, some kind of materials are like that, aren't they? Initially, you think, oh, I don't like that. But then when you really engage with it, there's something quite pleasant and beautiful about it. So I just wanted to acknowledge my lapse yesterday and say that I will endeavour to describe the images. And I think something we've been talking about at Breathworks actually is finding pieces of music for different moods. Very, very interesting. And the suggestion is to actually have a playlist. So a kind of sad playlist and a joyful playlist, or if you're in a lot of pain, what's the music that's going to help to soothe the pain? So that's also a very interesting thing. And as I said yesterday, we live in this era where we've got such easy access to a huge array of music online. You know, there's tons of stuff on YouTube that's free, and images likewise, and just smells. So I just wanted to acknowledge that. And another thing I wanted to say is we are posting stuff on Padlet, and I will post references, I'll post reading lists, all these kind of things. But my suggestion is you don't do any study during the retreat. So we drop into a different kind of learning while we're here. And the learning, as I said yesterday, it's a little bit like standing in a very gentle rain and you're just letting it seep in. And I suggest that you follow up all the references, books and so on after the retreat if you're interested. And there's also a number of order members that have given very, very good talks on Lojong, on 7-point mind training, 8 verses for mind training. People have led retreats, so we can post those references. But I really wouldn't recommend that you go into any of that during this retreat, because you just fill your head with stuff. And you don't need to do that. The main thing with these approaches is to relax into it. Okay, so moving on to today's content. Satipatthana. So I've got some slides here, but I'll be talking through them. You don't need to look at anything if you don't want to. They just help for some people. That's another thing I'm trying to do is speak to different learning styles. For some of us, seeing things will be really helpful. For others of us, just listen to the words will be enough. So just working out what works for you. So in this wonderful text and from the Pali Canon, the Buddha gets us to look at our experience very directly through these 4 doorways of body, Vedana, feeling tone, Chitta, the mind and the heart, and Dhammas, which is the main core of the Dhammas is the hindrances and the awakening factors. So it's more sort of detailed investigation of the mind. But today we're just going to focus on the body. And in the text, it's got a number of different sections within. So you've got the body section and then you've got subsections, and there's six of them. So it says, and how does she in regard to the body abide contemplating the body? See, that's very interesting as well, this word abide. How does she in regard to the body abide contemplating the body? So abiding for me has this quality of direct experience and kind of relaxed awareness. And the first section is breath. Here, gone to the forest, or to the root of a tree, or to an empty hut, she sits down. Having folded her legs crosswise, set her body erect, and established mindfulness in front of her, mindful she breathes in, mindful she breathes out. So this is a paraphrasing, it's got more detail, but I just want to give you a taste. So it's this idea of coming into awareness and being aware of the breath. So we did a lot of that yesterday. Really covered quite a lot of that. And then there's a section on postures, which is abiding with mindfulness, sitting, walking, standing, and lying down. So really what that is telling us is be mindful at all times, in all postures, because clearly that's pretty comprehensive. Doesn't explicitly say standing on your head, but it would definitely include that if you happen to stand on your head. So sitting, walking, standing, lying down, which is saying at all, however your body is positioned, be mindful. Then there's mindfulness of activities, and this again is very comprehensive. We're asked to be mindful going forward and returning, flexing and extending our limbs, wearing clothes. So this in the text it's wearing robes, but I've modernized this for us, wearing clothes, eating, drinking, consuming food and tasting, defecating and urinating, walking, standing, sitting, falling asleep, waking up, talking, and keeping silent. She acts clearly knowing. So again, that's just a very comprehensive list of be mindful of all activities. So all your body and all the different postures and then all the different activities. Then there's mindfulness of anatomical parts. And I've got the actual text here because I find this very interesting. Just as though there were a bag with an opening at both ends full of many sorts of grain, such as hill rice, red rice, beans, peas, millet, and white rice. And a person with good eyes were to open it and review it thus. This is hill rice. This is red rice. These are beans. These are peas. This is millet. This is white rice. In this way, they review the same body. Yeah, so that's very evocative, I find, that you've got a bag with an opening at both ends, which is pretty much what it is, isn't it? You know, we've got an opening here, we put stuff out, put stuff in, and we've got an opening at the other end where waste products come out. So we're encouraged to relate to the body, sort of not really over-identifying with it, but to see it as this collection of parts. We love it, you know, we need to care for the body. I'll say a bit more about this in a moment, but also to see it in a certain way quite dispassionately. So, you know, if you really get entangled up with your body, you just think, it's a bag with a hole at both ends with all this stuff in the middle. And then we're asked to be aware of the elements in the body, that this body that we're so identified with, that we rigidify around, that we turn into a solid, immovable object with our mind, is just a play of the elements. It's the earth element, the water element, the fire element, the air element. And then finally, the reflection is the corpse and decay. And it's got quite a graphic section here, starting from a fresh corpse being eaten by vultures, right through to bones crumbling into dust. So again, this whole point of this is to let go of being so attached to this human form. In terms of this retreat, we're going to primarily be focusing on the first three, which is breath, being mindful at all times of how the body is positioned, and being mindful at all times in activity. Because I think for Westerners in this era, this is what we really need. We just need to learn how to be in the body. And also because so many of us in the sort of modern Western era have got conditioning, which means that we've got self-hatred around the body. Not quite sure why that was, partly Christian conditioning and other things, but for many of us, we don't really feel very good about the body. So I think things like reflecting on the corpse and decay can be unhelpful, because actually we need to learn to love and care for this conditioned, changing and permanent form. So I think sticking with breath, activities and postures is pretty comprehensive for the moment. And then in the text, there's something called the refrain. So the refrain is like a chorus, and it comes into the text like, I often say it's like a drum beat. So the Buddha says, be aware of breathing, and then the refrain comes in, which is the kind of inside contemplation around breathing. Be aware of activities, and then this inside contemplation comes in. And the it's always got the same structure, which is being aware of that contemplation internally, externally, internally and externally. And the scholars generally agree that this means self and other. So you're aware that, yes, I have a body, and then you're aware, you have a body. And we'll be exploring the externally element explicitly in the second part of the morning in the compassion practices. She abides contemplating the nature of arising, of passing away, of both arising and passing away in the body. So this is a direct reflection on impermanence. And of course, we'll know from our study that as soon as you see into impermanence, that opens the doorway to the other two lakshanas of unsatisfactoriness, realizing that contracting and identifying with this impermanent process leads to suffering, it's unsatisfactory, and then the lakshana of emptiness, of there being no essential anything in this flow of form. And then mindfulness that there is a body is established to her, to the extent necessary for bare knowledge and continuous mindfulness. So this is an interesting teaching. This is saying the whole point of all this mindfulness is to help us become more and more aware. So we're not being aware of the body so that we can beautify it necessarily. You know, we might choose to take care around our appearance, that's important. But we're not being aware of the body so that we can have a better sex life necessarily. So this is interesting. Why are we doing this practice? It's so we can have bare knowledge and continuous mindfulness, because we know that this is the doorway to freedom. And then, and she abides independent, not clinging to anything in the world. And this is synonymous with enlightenment. So these are kind of progressive, these particular phrases. Self, other, impermanence. We're mindful to the extent necessary for bare knowledge, and then we abide independent, not clinging to anything in the world. And independent here doesn't mean separate. This can be confusing for people, that on the one hand we're being invited to be aware of self and other and flow and change, which of course opens out interconnectedness, and then suddenly we're being asked to be independent. So it's important to understand it means independent from clinging, independent from aversion. We have a free mind and we're not clinging to anything in the world. So that is how, in regard to the body, she abides contemplating the body. sharing that now. Yeah, so we're going to do a practice in a little while to just really directly experience that, directly experience this body, directly experience breathing, directly experience the physical. What does it mean to have the sort of physical dimension to life, and then to see into this fluid, changing nature, and see if we can get a little bit more space in the mind. So to say a little bit more about why mindfulness of the body is considered so important, because I think, again, this can be confusing for people, because people think, oh, it's all about freeing the mind, so I can just forget about my body, and the body is just this thing that I'm supposed to not identify with. So why is there all this fuss about the body? You know, why do I even need to be aware of my body? It's kind of unpleasant. Can't I just split off from my body and have a lovely free mind? You know, that can be a kind of attractive thought, but it's not what the Buddha taught, and it's not going to work as a strategy. And this is because the body is actually where experience takes place. Yeah, it's not taking place somewhere else, it's taking place here in this form. And sometimes, and you might think, oh no, that's not true, it's taking place in my mind, in my head. You may have that thought, you know, I don't agree with her, it's taking place in my head. But it's very helpful to experience the head as a limb of the body. This is something I've really been reflecting on and drawing out, because I think many of us, we shoot out of the body up into the head, and we have a duality between head and body. And that's, again, a very Western thing. It comes from Descartes. And it's not traditional in Eastern approaches, and it's also not true. If you think about it, that the body is actually physical. The head is physical. You know, the head is a physical part of our experience. Just as we got the arms and the legs as limbs, we have this head as a limb. And there's a lovely quote from the Anguttara Nikaya where the Buddha says, "The end of the world can never be reached by walking. However, without having reached the world's end, there is no release from suffering." So straight away you have this kind of mysterious paradox. And then he says, "I declare that it is in this fathom-long carcass, with his perceptions and thoughts, that there is the world, the origin of the world, the cessation of the world, and the path leading to the cessation of the world." So it's a very powerful teaching. He's saying, it's here. Don't walk to the end of the world. It's here. This is where it's all happening, our thoughts and perceptions, and so on. And after the Buddha's death, Ananda described mindfulness of the body as his true friend. Now the Buddha had died. So interesting, isn't it? Mindfulness of the body is my true friend. And so what does this mean? What does a true friend mean to us? And a true friend means trust, warmth, relaxation, ease and intimacy, these kind of qualities. So the sort of secret teaching there is to have our body as our true friend. You know, this is where it's all happening. Befriend it. Don't see it as this kind of annoying, the sort of thing I'm just dragging through my life, and my head's much more interesting, which is how many of us do relate to the body. It's kind of, just this kind of irritation. And we just want to be in the head all the time. But the body is our true friend. So we can ask ourselves that question, is my body my friend? How do I treat it? And what is my attitude to my body? And again, be kind towards yourself when the answer emerges, because you may well think, no, it's not my friend. You know, it sometimes feels like my enemy. It's annoying, it gets in the way, it's got these needs. And surely I can just get rid of awareness of the body and be happier. The Buddha's saying, no, that's not true. And it's important to befriend it. And then what does it mean to be mindful of the body? Yeah, this is also so interesting in our practice. I think for many of us, we think to be mindful means to think about something. So if I'm going to be mindful of my body, I'm going to think about it. I might sort of have some kind of internal image from the outside. But mindfulness of the body is a direct experience of the physicality of our moment by moment awareness. So I've been using the language yesterday of coming inside the body. I like this language of resting inside, breathing inside the body. Resting in the body, abiding there, not thinking about it. And I think many of us, as I said yesterday, saying the mindfulness of breathing, we can become very proficient at being mindful of thinking about breathing. And that's not what the invitation is from the Buddha. It's no, be inside it. And there's a very nice little exercise that Prasadavati does, where she says, well, let's all do this together. Just touch your fingers together very lightly. Just touch them. Feel it. Feel that contact. And know it. This is the experience of contact, of me experiencing my body directly. And see if you can go right inside the experience rather than thinking about it. There will be thoughts, of course, but moving out of the head right into your fingertips, maybe moving them around a wee bit. Are you breathing? Probably lots of us have held our breath straight away to see if you can breathe. Okay, that's it. That is it. That is mindfulness of the body. It's not complicated. It's not rocket science. It's learning how to have that kind of quality of awareness directly inside the body. So it's knowing directly rather than filtering through analysis. And it's surprisingly difficult. It's a surprisingly difficult thing to do. But a lot of the practice that we'll be doing this week, and I think generally we can bring this into our practice, it's stripping away all the elaborations that we pile on top of our direct experience. And it's learning how to have become much more simple experience. As I was saying yesterday, I think the Dharma is in essence quite simple. But it's very hard for us because we're so used to proliferating, elaborating, having loads of papancha around experience. So just drop in. Okay, and sati, which is one of the words for mindfulness. Sati is the quality of being present right now. Analio talks about this being a middle way between suppression and over-identification. I think that's very, very helpful. So it's a middle way between, oh, don't want this, push it down, or kind of being lost in our experience and completely over-identified with it. So it's a broad, open, receptive awareness. And that's quite delicate and sensitive and can be exquisitely beautiful. Exquisitely beautiful, just to drop in and be and rest and know. And in terms of the warrior training that we're doing on this retreat, there is real power and real strength in that softness. And there's a gorgeous, gorgeous quote from Lao Tzu, which I often refer to, where he says, "Water is fluid, soft, and yielding. But water will wear away rock, which is rigid and cannot yield." As a rule, whatever is fluid, soft, and yielding will overcome whatever is rigid and hard. This is another paradox. What is soft is strong. So you can really, I'll put that quote on the Padlet, but you can really think about that. What is soft is strong. There's tremendous power that can come for us when we learn how to just be with our direct experience, with this kind of friendly, warm, fluid, pliable, sensitive, flexible awareness. And it's very traditional in Buddhism to use the image of the bamboo, that a bamboo bends, but it doesn't break. Yeah, in a big storm, bamboo bends, and then it springs back again. So we can try to live like bamboo, being flexible but firmly rooted. Yeah, bamboos are also famous for their roots that will invade your garden. If you give it half a chance, they spread. So we can think of having these roots, you know, roots of being in the body. It's very grounding. And then that gives us this amazing kind of pliability and flexibility of mind. So what is strong is soft. And it's all part of training. It's all part of mind training, that the mind, our thoughts, emotions, our experience takes place in this body. And by learning to let go of all the ways we rigidify, this is something I've been also been really thinking about lately, that sort of, I like this word rigidify, and I'm not even sure if it is a word in English, but this kind of way we crunch down around experience and we brace against it and we solidify it, and then, bless us, we react to it and we cause ourselves loads of suffering. We are really strange creatures. But if we can just rest, yield, soften, find our power, find our warrior nature. And of course, all the Eastern martial arts are using the same principle. Aikido, discovered yesterday that Dhamma Mega is a second Dan black belt karate expert. So is it true of karate?
Yeah, to some degree.
To some degree, you know, sort of, you learn to work with energies rather than oppose energies. Aikido, very definitely something comes at you and you learn how to deflect the energy. And it can be really brilliant and difficult communication. I sometimes think I need to adopt the Aikido method and just not oppose, but let it come and engage and let the energy pass. So the Buddha said, I know of no single thing more conducive to great harm than an unrestrained mind. I know of no single thing more conducive to great welfare than the developed mind. It's beautiful, isn't it? I know of no single thing more conducive to great harm than an unrestrained mind. I know of no single thing more conducive to great welfare than the developed mind. Okay, so let's have a go at training our minds and finding this kind of power of fluid awareness in the body. So let's just have a moment to set ourselves up, and we'll salute the shrine now, so we can sort of honour this space. And if you've got a shrine at home, you might like to salute it. And then we'll move into practice, probably for about 20 minutes or so. Um, 15, 20 minutes, so we can really sort of drop inside this.
Just stay here, just salute the shrine.
Sorry?
Should I just stay here?
Yes. Well, if you,
it's a bit odd, isn't it?
I think if you stand and salute the shrine, people can. Yes. Or if you come here, come across. Yeah, that's good. Let's do it there. Lovely.
In calm response. Namo Buddhaya.
Namo Buddhaya.
Namo Dharmaya.
Namo Dharmaya.
Namo Sanghaya.
Namo Sanghaya.
Namo Nama.
Namo.
taking time, as always, to really consciously attend to your position, your posture. And you can do this sitting, you can do it lying down, you can do it standing, you can do it walking. And it might be quite interesting to do something, maybe that's a little bit unfamiliar, that might be interesting, rather than just sort of flopping into usual position. So we're really aware. And I think we're such creatures of habit. You know, we just flop into something and think, oh, that's why I always do it. And it can be interesting just to mix it up a bit. And beginning to settle. And seeing if we can allow our awareness to drop inside the body, to rest inside the body. So you may even have kind of quite physical sense of awareness sliding out of the head, like water, and pouring down inside the body to fill the body. So during this practice, seeing if we can taste and get an experience of coming inside direct experience rather than always just thinking about what's happening. Of course, there will be thoughts. That's inevitable. The minds love to think. Our minds love to think. So we're not judging that or suppressing it. But you might notice, oh, I'm conceptualizing again. And then in the noticing, drop inside that experience, just like touching the fingertips together, that felt sense that we had. So let's drop inside the contact between the body and the surface it's resting upon, whatever posture we've chosen. And let's see if we can yield into that experience, yield our weight, yield our awareness. And Lao Tzu also uses that word yield. Water is fluid, soft, and yielding. And actually, I often quite like using this water feeling for awareness. I like thinking of my body being drenched in awareness or saturated in awareness, just full of this kind of soft, fluid, yielding, watery awareness. Lao Tzu says, as a rule, whatever is fluid, soft, and yielding will overcome whatever is rigid and hard. What is soft is strong. And then resting inside, breathing inside the body. This direct experience of the movements and sensations of breathing in the front and the back and the sides of the body. Movements inside the body, movements on the surface of the body. Letting the four diaphragms be soft, pliable, yielding, participating in breathing. Soft buttocks, soft belly, softness in the back of the body, so the back is participating in breathing, broadening, subsiding. releasing around the base of the skull so that the throat can be open. Breath flowing in and out. It's very interesting dance where air becomes breath and then breath becomes air again. Never find exactly the place where that transition happens. And then the brain just resting inside its little cradle deep inside the head. Also participating in this flow, this rhythm of breathing. Touching into the five B's of the breath that I introduced yesterday. Buttocks, belly, back, base of the skull, brain. Being aware of the weight of the body resting into the support. So we're not perching on top, but we're resting, yielding, and receiving gratefully the support of the chair, the floor, the bed, the planet, the gift of gravity. Was that beautiful line from the poem from Rilke yesterday? To patiently trust our heaviness. To fall. Even a bird has to do that before it can fly. If you keep on bouncing out of the body again, that's really normal. But in the noticing, we're having a moment of awareness, a moment of mindfulness. And we get this very powerful choice point. Awareness gives choice, and we can choose to invite awareness back inside the body. And maybe we bounce away again, we notice, we come back. That is the training. Breathing is disturbing for you in any way. Perhaps focusing more on the weight aspect and the stability aspect in the bottom, the feet, the hands. Coming into the back of the body can be soothing, stabilizing, particularly the lower back, I think. And low and deep in the body. Now let's see if we can get a felt sense of being like bamboo. Roots, stability going into the earth. So we're very grounded. And then this quality of pliability, flexibility, and how we experience our form, how we relate to our form. Rather than the body feeling stuck, rigid, unyielding, the body becomes pliable, an expression of the flow of life, impermanent. Really calling it the body is a misnomer. Perhaps we should just call it embodying. Moments of embodying. Continual process of change. Notice moments of rigidifying. In the noticing, you can choose to yield, soften, rest. What's happening now? If you've wandered far away without any harsh judgment, you just think, oh, I'm aware, I've noticed, I have a choice. Right now, I can come back inside this flow of experience inside my body. Grounded, rooted, and yet pliable and fluid, flexible, like bamboo, like water. Feeling inside the courage, the bravery that it takes to just be in the body without flinching, without turning away, without suppressing, without getting lost. This kind of fearless presence that builds confidence and power within us. This warrior attitude. Let's introduce a tiny little bit of movement. Fingers, maybe the toes. Notice, do you immediately grip? Breathing, body, mind. Seeing if we can keep fluidity, pliability, flow as we move a little bit. Can we do slightly bigger movements? What would it be like to be able to bring this quality of deep embodiment into the movements of daily life? To different postures in the body. Your own way, in your own time. Coming into bigger movements, bringing this little practice to a close, but keeping our awareness flowing. So we're not switching off, but we're just transitioning into something else. And transitions are so interesting. It's often the transitions where we lose it. The transitions are quite a sort of art to learn to manage. Transitions is an art. So I'd like to hear from a couple of people about what you noticed. So not your evaluation or your judgment, but what actually happened in that practice. And if you use the reactions button at the bottom and do the raise hand, then I'll know that you're there because you'll pop to the top of my screen. Just have time for a couple of people, then we'll have a break. And come back for the compassion, other regarding dimension.
I can say something.
Okay, thank you.
Linda. Well, mine was at the end of the practice when you were talking about transitioning. And I was not here, it was down here, my hands, right? And I was starting to move them like this, almost like not flying, but kind of floating, but being totally in my experience, just totally feeling what they felt like I was almost starting to fly off. And it felt really beautiful, just totally being with the feeling. And I think that was just the result of becoming so embedded during the practice. Yes, so that was, I was actually really enjoying like this, just this feeling of going like that, but being totally present. Yes.
We can't see your hand, Jess, just go, so could you do that on the camera so we can see?
Okay, so, well, my hands were down at waist length, okay, so can you see them now?
No.
Okay, let me have a look at my image and see, okay, right. Okay, so they're at my waist length, okay?
Yeah.
But they're like that. And they're kind of...
gorgeous.
Just doing that. Like, not flying, but just kind of... Because it's to do with transitioning. And just feeling, being totally present with all of the feeling.
Yeah.
That just arose, as it were, at the end of the practice.
Yeah. So what can you learn from that, do you think?
Well, what I learned from it is that sort of feeling of, pleasure's not quite the right word, is it? Pleasure sounds like a grasping thing, but just joy, I suppose, the joy of being in one's, really in one's body and experience. And it felt a bit tight, you know, some of the, but that was okay, that was part of it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Beautiful. Thank you. And it's the way you're describing it, and forgive me if I've misunderstood this, but it sounds sort of gloriously simple.
Yes.
Someone. There is always available. And so what was happening in your mind as that was going on?
I was experiencing the feeling of joy in the body. So I don't think much was happening in the mind. I'm not sure, but I loved it when you talk, you know, the exercise like that. It's the simplicity of being.
Yeah.
And not adding all the propension, not adding all the thoughts, just being present.
Yeah.
So that's like a really beautiful teaching.
And then you're also describing it very beautifully, you know, taking that into this very gentle movement. Yeah. Beautiful. Thank you.
Thank you.
Yeah, Linda's described something that is very helpful to remember in terms of the way we're wired up as humans, that if we're really in our senses and in the body, we cannot be lost in thought at exactly the same moment. We just can't do that. If we're here, we can't be there. We might bounce straight back into thinking, but then come back into the body. Ah, the thoughts will die away. It's a bit like all our awareness gets filled with our senses. Very, very interesting and very encouraging. But if you come into this embodied awareness, you cannot be lost in daydreams at exactly the same moment. Okay, so Vicky.
Sorry, just to mute myself. So that was really lovely. And I think it was actually, for me, that was quite profound in the sense that I was finding my way into something that felt quite new. And sort of created for me an awareness that even when I think I'm not in my mind, I am in my mind, I'm thinking about them. Lower my hand. I'm thinking about the bodily experiences, and it's so subtle. It's so subtle, that movement between thinking about them and being aware of them. And I found at one point when I was trying to get sort of more and more not in my mind and more in my body, I felt like I was going to fall asleep. And then I was going to bring myself back up again, kind of think I'm not too much. And just sort of, so it was a really sort of interesting place, which I haven't got. I'm just sort of slipping around in it at the moment. But it was very novel, and it sort of made me realise that I've always been a little bit too much on the thinking side of how my body feels, as opposed to the feeling side of how my body feels. Yeah. But I found that really helpful. Thank you.
Yeah, you've described that really well, I think, and I'm sure many of us will relate to that. You know, we so easily go into this conceptual overlay. And then, of course, comes preference and opinions and stories and narratives and views and all that other stuff that we get so quickly tangled up in. But I think you've also really beautifully described the kind of play of awareness that we can all take from the session, you know, going to sleep. Ah, I notice I'm going to sleep, just arousing my energy a little bit. Maybe you didn't say this, but then we can rouse it a bit too much and we go straight back into thinking, back. So it's mindfulness is dynamic. I think this is another important point. It's not like we go into this kind of static bliss state and that's just when we're stuck there. But it's this continual kind of calibration, listening deeply, knowing how to respond, sort of alert, flexible awareness. And yeah, we can get to a place of tremendous stability and calm in the sort of higher dhyanas, but there's still, you know, it's not stuck, it's not a static sort of state that's kind of inert. Awareness is very alive. Awareness is very alive, and it's just going to continue. So you've described it really well, and it sounds like a kind of door's open there for you to really pour into. And then, of course, the great challenge is to maintain interest that, as Sona always says, the mind goes to what it's interested in. So it's how do we maintain interest?
And not to kind of think too much about where just not thinking about that process as well. So, I mean, it is.
I know, it's so delicious, really.
Interesting.
Great, thank you. So we've just got time for one more person, because I wanted to have a break. So Maria Jose. And I'm sorry, Maury, we won't have time for you this time, but another time. Yeah.
Thank you very much. I have always a bit of a conflict, because I am in pain a lot of the time, and between embodying my body and letting it yield into the earth, and the body contracting because it's in pain. It's just that I yield, but it contracts, just that moment that I just don't yield, it contracts. And then I call it a bit of a battle, and I get very tired, and I tend to fall asleep. I don't fall asleep, but there's this sort of space in between.
Yeah.
Do you have any?
Yeah, I mean, thank you for raising that, because that's a not uncommon experience. This is, I mean, Buddhism is just absolutely shot through with paradox. So, you know, the Buddha is saying it's happening here, and we have a body, and yet, so many of us, the body is not that place of ease and pleasure. It's a place of struggle. And that might be because of, you know, physical pain. It might be because of somatizing mental and emotional contraction and stuckness. It's all here. So we're trying to come in and befriend something that is, by its very nature, quite problematic for many of us, as it is for me. So I can speak to what you're saying. And I think if we just keep at it, just keep on coming home, yielding, softening, coming home, yielding, softening, breathing, holding my breath, release, open, soften, kindness, go to sleep, wake up, in my head, come back into my body, contraction, soften, heals. That is kind of it, yeah? And what we're doing is we're developing a kind of new default setting away from reaction to this bamboo, fluid, watery place of rest that I can love and I can come home to. I think as well that, you know, we can do things like if we very oriented around the pain, it starts to kind of fill up more of our brain. There's neuroscience around that. So we can find other parts in the body. We're dropping in, there's the pain again, contraction. Look, my shoulders, they're quite pleasant. Let's go there for a bit. Let's fill my awareness with another part of the body. Or let's go broad. Let's feel the whole body rather than pain, there it is again. I hate it. It's like, okay. The whole body. I think that's what I do a lot of. I go into the whole body, like the whole field, and there's so much there. So if it was music, rather than honing in on, I don't know, you know, the drums that are just bashing away, go to the whole symphony and it's glorious. You know, you've got the violins and you've got maybe some huge chorus of glorious voice. And the drums are there bashing away, but you've got everything else as well. So again, it's calibration, playing around, seeing it as endlessly sort of inviting and interesting, which doesn't mean it's pleasant. I'll go much more into this tomorrow, that I think many of us make the mistake that awareness should always be pleasant. Yes. So how do we respond to the unpleasant is one of the great arts of the spiritual life. How do we respond to the unpleasant? So those of us who've got pain, actually, we do have a very rich doorway. I mean, I'm always very averse to the language of, you're really lucky you've got pain because you've got this focus. I think, actually there's nothing good about having pain, but there it is something that, because the awareness just goes straight there, at least you're present, you know, you're not lost in daydreaming quite so much because your awareness is there. There's something really shouting at you. So then it's like, okay, how do I relate to that? and finding another part in the body, broadening, softening, yielding, noticing the habits of contraction. That's hugely interesting. And
I make sounds to because I my body vibrates with sound. I make the sounds so that the body vibrates and relax more.
Good. Yeah, good. Yeah, that's very creative. Yeah. But the other thing I'd like to really reflect back to you is there's a huge amount of awareness in what you described. Mm-hmm. And that is the practice. You know, that is the practice. Just to notice that habitual contraction. That is the practice.
Yes.
Notice often. Eventually the default setting changes. And that's definitely my personal experience, that, you know, in that practice that I found it deeply pleasurable. I was present, yeah, I got pain, but the pain wasn't the only thing. So if I think back to, you know, 20 years ago, that would have been a deeply unpleasant practice where I would have, you know, it would have been like the invitation to come out of my head would have been like just bashing against, you know, a sort of concrete slab and there was no doorway. And now it's like, oh yeah, here I am again. Good, lovely, yes, soften, rest. Bamboo, oh, nice, I'm like bamboo, good, yeah. So the whole sitting can change, we just chip away. I often say it's like chipping away at a cliff face with a teaspoon. And eventually the cliff face just dissolves. Okay, so I've got a couple of questions. I'll just touch on these very, very briefly because I don't want to stop. So does softening include looking for the pleasant in my body? Yes, definitely. You know, we can find, oh yes, because the pleasure is, you know, it's an important part of our practice. And then someone said, can I ask if that relates to trauma too? Yes, you know, if we've got trauma, where often the body isn't an easy place to be. So it's very, very gently coming inside. So you don't sort of zoom in, but it's like, oh, yes, soften, soften. And there's yielding quality, looking for stability. You know, breathing can be triggering for people's trauma. So come to some other sensation, resting in the bum, resting on the feet, resting in the hands. So we're giving ourselves somewhere that feels safe in the body. But we're just very, very gently sort of re-establishing an embodied experience that's not threatening. So that's what we're doing with these practices, but to take it very gently. Okay, so let's have a break and homework. I think we'll just have a 10-minute break. So, you know, glass of water, go to the loo. Homework, watch your awareness as you move. Are you breath holding? Are you over-efforting? Are you thinking about your body or are you in your body? So just keep the slower practice going. And if we come back for 11:47 for the other regarding dimension. Thanks, everybody. Just got 1 minute more. So yeah, how's your body now? And are you inside it, inhabiting it, resting inside, yielding, finding your power to be soft is to be strong. Okay, so what I'm going to do now is move on to the Lojong other regarding dimension, so a little bit of input, and then we'll do another practice. I touched on this last night, the mind training. And I touched on how it's based on a view of what's called absolute bodhicitta. So this is the language that's used in the Mahayana and the Vajrayana for reality, for truth, for huge, boundless, liberated mind. And the image, of course, is the clear blue sky. So, you know, it could sound a bit technical. What on earth does absolute bodhicitta mean? That's what it means. It means the view of freedom and the liberated awareness. And then you get what's called relative bodhicitta, which is relating to humanity in the world from that perspective, which is compassion. We look out into the world, we relate to the world, and we realize how deeply we all suffer because we don't live in harmony with that view. Or we don't live from that place of boundless awareness. And there's lots of ways of talking about that. You'll know that from your study. I always like the phrase, the radiant nature of mind. For me, that resonates. I know for some other people, it doesn't resonate at all. But I really love reflecting or getting a sense how we are all kind of fleeting condensations of the radiance. And that helps me really relate to other people with love, like, ah, you too are a condensation of radiance, of the radiant nature of reality. But of course, all words are inadequate. I'm sure some people would say, oh, that's, you can't talk about it like that. That's not right, or whatever. But we find our own way in, and we find our own metaphors. But yes, I love that. We've got an image here of just a whole load of people. And, you know, each one of those people is like the universe unto themselves. And they're as important as we are. And, you know, if you look at that image, if I look at that image, it's so tempting to objectify. They're just little objects. Could be trees, they could be cars, they could be laptops. But actually, oh, they're people. Are they people? They're just like me. Wow, they're breathing. They've got a whole universe of emotions going on right now. Thousands of thoughts pouring through their minds. So it's like waking up to our connectedness from the perspective of big mind. So another way of talking about what we're doing on this retreat is the Satipatthana practice. The one way you can look at that is a bit like we're looking in a mirror and we're just really examining, who am I? You know, what is this human experience as lived out by me right now? There's a body, there's sensation, there's feeling, there's thoughts, there's emotions, and there's a potential to move towards liberation. So it's a bit like we're deeply looking in the window. And then when we come onto the Lojong, I love this image, the mirror becomes a window. The mirror becomes a window. So it's like you're looking in this mirror, deeply examining the kind of the felt experience in oneself. And then this mirror, oh, it's a window. Wow, look, there's all these people just like me. And you're using all that self-awareness as the springboard for empathy. And then here's another image of loads of people. And you're really able to know to some extent what their experience is like, because you know so deeply what your experience is like. And this self-other dichotomy becomes much more kind of fluid, connected, empathetic, and open. And of course, what the usual human default setting is I am very, very important and you are an object. That's the way, if we're honest, most of us relate to life. So it's like, oh, we're all really, really important. None of us are objects. We're all this extraordinary kind of condensation of experience. And we all tend to rigidify around that and create lots of extra suffering for ourselves. So I'm just going to run through some other ways of looking at the underlying principle of this Mahayana mind training. So the complete instruction in a single sentence from Padampa Sangye: whatever you want, others all want as much. So act on that. It's great, isn't it? That's it. Whatever you want, others all want as much. So act on that. So act on this deep shift in awareness whatever's happening for you, ah, it happens for others similarly. So sometimes I think of it as for me, so for you, as for me, so for everybody. And it's shifting from me, 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 me to we. In a way, it's a me to we shift. As for me, so for everybody. And what we're doing in these practices, I touched on this a little bit last night, is where using this mind training to unwind the structure of the ego. You know, what is it that holds this ego together that keeps us so rigid and separate and causes us suffering? And one of them is preferencing ourselves over others. So in this practice, always think of others as the antidote. And it's not denial, it's not denying self, it's not turning into a doormat, but it's continually learning how to turn outwards. Always think of others as an antidote to preferencing self over other. And then the other thing we do that causes us suffering is we close down around suffering. I mean, Maria Jose described that very well. There's the pain and then there's the contraction. And so what we do here is we bring adversity onto the path as the antidote to turning away from suffering. Like, we just welcome everything. And I get the sense that when a teacher went to Tibet and he wanted to bring it all back to basics, it's like, well, how do people use everything that happens in their lives as an opportunity for awakening and bring adversity onto the path? Because one of the things we habitually do is we close down around difficulties. So it's highly practical and pragmatic. So just a few quotes, and I'll put this PowerPoint on the Padlet so you don't need to remember any of this or take notes particularly. So central to this tradition is what's called exchanging self and other, which can sound so strange. But I think it's exchanging self-importance for being other-regarding. So exchanging self and other is a shorthand for exchanging self-importance, where we think we're more important than others to become other-regarding. So Patril Rinpoche, wonderful, wonderful teacher. He says, the bodhicitta practice of exchanging oneself and others is the ultimate and unfailing quintessential meditation for all those who have set out on the path of the Mahayana teachings. Reject like poison the negative mentality which gives so much importance to yourself. They're very strong teachings, these, and these teachers, you know, they're not gentle necessarily. There's a book, Patril Rinpoche's biography is called Enlightened Vagabond, and it's just totally marvelous. He just roamed the Himalayan wastelands, teaching the Bodhicharyavatara endlessly. And he was very humble. He usually went completely incognito, looking like a complete sort of tramp. He'd go into villages, no one knew who he was. He didn't want people to know who he was. Very loving, very kind. He'd go to places and tame the demons and so on. But yeah, wonderful guy. Shantideva, whoever wishes quickly to become a refuge for himself and others should undertake this sacred mystery to take the place of others, giving them his own. Yeah, and again, that's short, and it doesn't mean you literally kind of, you know, become someone else, but imaginatively take the place of others and give up this sense of I'm the only person in the universe that matters. That's what this is getting at. We all matter. And Shantideva said this when asked why one should take on the suffering of others, adding to one's own burden. You see, that is such a great question that we all think. It's a bit like, oh my God, my life's so bad already. Why do I want to take on anyone else's? Surely I'll be swamped. So that's a really great question. And he said, I should eliminate the suffering of others because it is suffering, just like my own suffering. I should take care of others because they are sentient beings, just as I am a sentient being. I love that. It's so simple. You know, why it's completely illogical that one would only care about one's own suffering, because we're all sentient beings. And that why would I only take care of myself when I could take care of all sentient beings as well? So I should take care of others because they're sentient beings just as I am a sentient being. Shantideva, all suffering arises through our self-grasping and self-concern. All happiness comes from cherishing others. Yeah, and we probably all chanted the transference of merit and self-surrender verse of the puja many, many times, which is an encapsulation of this emotion, this volition, this wish. Petra again. Completely eradicate all those wrong attitudes based on attachment and aversion, which makes you reject others and care only for yourself, and think of yourself and others as being entirely equal. Yeah. So this, of course, is Ratnasambhava's wisdom as well, the wisdom of equality. Shantideva, although it has many divisions, such as its arms and so on, the body is protected as a whole. Likewise, different beings with their sorrows and joys are all equal, like myself, in their yearning for happiness. Yeah, this is a very famous one, very interesting. And what it's getting at here is I sit here, I've got this name, Vidyamana, and I've got what I call my body. But as we've been discussing, this body is what I call the body, has got many, many different aspects. It's got arms and legs and head and brain and this bag with a hole at either end. Sensations, they're all changing all the time. And yet what I do with my mind is I turn that into something that I really care about as the body. And he's saying we can do that. We can imagine that all beings are connected similarly. It makes no more sense for me to draw all those things together and turn them into a thing that I'm identified with, than for me to think, oh, look, I've got Vimokshini, Arijaya, Dhammamegha here. You are my limbs. We're all part of this consciousness, and we are all these different limbs. Why don't I care about you as much as I care about my own hand? Like my left hand hurts, my right hand immediately comes over to care for it. I can have that response to all beings. So that's what this is getting us, very, very powerful teaching. And there's an image here, very, very beautiful image of the thousand-armed Avalokiteshvara, which I think sort of evokes that very strongly. All his arms just reaching out into the world. And we can have that kind of attitude towards all living beings. Very, very beautiful. Yeah. And I think the thousand-armed Avalokiteshvara is such a powerful archetype, where you have the sort of stability of something that's quite sort of centralized, the body with all the heads facing in all the directions of time and space, and then really infinite arms reaching out, all with their own implements, responding to beings in individual ways. It's a very, very beautiful image. And this is I found this online. It's the Padmaloka Shrine Room. Mm-hmm. And amazing. So you've got a Buddha, and then you've got, I don't know if it's a painting or if it's got the outside light shining in. It looks like you've got a background that then kind of fragments into the branches of a tree, and then you've got the world shining in through that. So again, you've got the sort of centralized stability and all the limbs reaching out. Amazing. So that's the kind of quality we can have. So we're not fragmenting. We still have this kind of bamboo yielding groundedness, and we're just able to open our hearts, open our minds to connect with all beings everywhere. And this is a nice summary from Alan Wallace, a lovely book, wonderful book called Buddhism with Attitude, on the 7-point mind training. And he says, wisdom without skillful means, which is another word for compassion, is bondage. And skillful means without wisdom is bondage. Insight alone can get derailed into an indifferent state of disengaged, uncaring, self-centered, barren, isolated inner peace. And compassion alone can lead to exhaustion and burnout. And balance is the central theme of the 7-point mind training and all these other Lojong teachings. So all these quotes that I've given today, they're giving you a kind of context, the context of the attitude, and then that's expressed in either the 8 verses for training the mind or the 7-point mind training. But I wanted to give you this kind of big picture today of what the 7-point mind training is getting at. Okay, and as I said, I'll put all those quotes on the Padlet if you want to dwell on them. Yeah, there might be one or two that really speak to you, and just let them into your heart. Okay, so what we're going to do now is a meditation again, where we're going to use our awareness to come into the body again. We'll come back, we'll sort of start where we left off in the previous practice. And then we're going to really practice inviting in other people and cultivating deep empathy, cultivating deep recognition that, you are just like me. You too are a rich and complex human being who is just like me. You're breathing in and out. You tend to push away the unwanted with all that follows, and you tend to pounce on the pleasant with all that follows, and you have the potential to be free of that. And then at the end, I'm going to read out the verses of the 7-point mind training in this kind of poetic form, just to conclude. But before you all get too settled down, let's just spend a moment looking at the screen. So spend a few moments taking one another in with, from this point of view of recognition, from this point of view of, look at you, you're just like me. So rather than objects, these are shared, we've all got this shared human experience. So it's a little bit like the wisdoms of Ratnasambhava and Amitabha. So the wisdom of Ratnasambhava is we're all equal in our sort of empty nature. We're all fluid, we're all changing. We're all equally the condensations of the radiant nature of reality. And then Amitabha's wisdom, we express that uniquely. We express that uniquely, we look different, we've got different backgrounds to our Zoom screen, different rooms, different shapes and sizes and so on, but we're all equally equal. We are all equally empty of anything fixed and unchanging. We're all, well, I like this expression, we're all equally condensations of the radiant nature of reality. We're all equally stardust. And it's interesting looking at the screen. Already there's, I'm picking up some quality that we're all more here already. There's more. It's beautiful, actually. More presence. Shared presence. Okay, good. So now let's move into the meditation. Closing our eyes if we want to. Settling, arriving, yielding. Allowing our awareness to slide out of the head down through the body and to fill the body. This precious body, the place of practice, our field of practice. Can we befriend it? Can we care for it? Can we even love it? Breathing in the whole body. Diaphragms open, receptive to breathing, participating in breathing. Effortless breathing. The breathing is triggering or difficult coming into some other part of the body. Stabilizing, maybe the contact with the floor, the bed, the chair, into the hands, into the feet. Sounds. It's finding one's own way deep into the body as an experience, not an idea. If we've got pain or discomfort in our experience, can we bring that into our field of practice rather than contracting against it? Just let it be there. We don't need to over-focus. But let it be part of this field of loving, tender awareness in the body. Now staying centered and grounded, let's open the circumference of our awareness, a little bit like the thousand-armed Avalokiteshvara, to include everybody else on this retreat, all the people we've just been taking in, either visually or feeling connected with them. Just let them rest in our field of awareness. Just as if we were in the shrine room together physically, would have a felt sense of one another. We can do the same thing with this virtual setting. Of course, there's many people here who wouldn't be able to be with us physically, either for geographical reasons or physical reasons. You can really delight in that. So here we all are, resting, embodied, breathing in and out. We all tend to push away pain with all the dramas that follow, and we all tend to pounce onto pleasure, grab hold of it with all the dramas that follow. We've all got the potential to be free of that. So we're all kind of equal in these core drives, these core impulses. None of us have any core unchanging essence. We are all a flow of experience, fleeting condensations of the radiant nature of reality. How amazing. Now, maybe if you want to, you could allow one particular individual to come into the foreground of awareness. Maybe somebody that's been in your group yesterday, or that you know already, who's here on the retreat. If you can let them be in your presence without imposing opinions, preference, views, judgments. Resting in the simplicity of our shared human experience. Everything I experience in my own life, this person experiences in their life in their own way. The details will be different, but the basic experiences will be very, very similar deep down. The in-breath, breathing in awareness of this person in their wholeness, receiving them into our heart, and then on the out-breath, breathing out metta, goodwill, well-wishing, may you be well and happy. Notice if you're over-efforting, forcing, straining, in the noticing, just relax the mind, the heart. Yeah, soften. Allowing this person to join all of us again. Sort of rest back into the field of beings that is us. Breathing in awareness of all of us and breathing out love, well-wishing, kindness. May you all be well and happy. And it's very easy to add some kind of strain and forcing when we do these practices. Seeing if we can keep this quality of being deeply in the body with this kind of soft power that we touched into earlier. Inviting all these other beings to enter this space. I always just imagine you're all sitting around me, and as I breathe in naturally, there's just my heart opening into this awareness of all of you as fellow beings, fellow travellers. And as I breathe out my natural breath, this well-wishing pause into all of your hearts. Again, it's got a simplicity to it, an immediacy to it. It's embodied, it's present. Now let's allow the circumference of our awareness to expand infinitely to include all beings. Just like the thousand-armed Avalokiteshvara and that beautiful image we saw earlier on of this figure grounded and stable with arms just reaching everywhere or opening everywhere. Breathing in awareness of all that we share and breathing out love, kindness, well-wishing, compassion. If you're drifting, a bit lost, then how can you brighten your interest in this tremendous mystery of self and other? If you're a bit tight, softening awareness, opening, resting, yielding. Thank you. let these words drop into this space of the great teaching of the 7-point mind training. First things first, precious life, death, actions, fruit, and suffering, training in the bodhicittas, stability first, all this is dream, where is unborn awareness? Even emptiness is empty. Let it rest in the light. Now walk in the dream. Giving and taking with every breath. Objects of attachment, hostility, confusion. The poisons are the roots of virtue. Remember in words. Turning obstacles into aids. Bad times. Turn boulders into stepping stones. One thing only to blame. Kindness, especially to the enemy. No reality of its own, but all an emanation of the Buddha. Four practices. Gather good. Make pure the bad. Thank spirits who bring either. Whatever happens, take it in. Synthesis, 5 powers, life and death. Resolve to achieve the bodhicittas. Familiar, constantly close. White seed of virtue blossoming in life. At death, releasing attachment. Prayer. Abandoning self-grasping. The measures of training the mind. All Dharma has one goal, myself the better witness. Rely on the happiness of the mind. The pledges, 3 principles. Precepts unbroken, be neither ostentatious nor uneven. Change yourself, but stay the same. Don't criticize. Think nothing of the other side. Don't hope for great results. Don't eat poisonous conceit. Don't lean lightly on the pillar of distortion. No sarcastic words. No lying in wait for the weak. No passing the load. Don't take credit at the top. No deceit. Keep the devil away from the divine. No profit from another's loss. The practices. One practice for every situation. One answer to any withdrawal. Remember each beginning, each ending. Practice at either pole. Promises worth more than life. 3 austerities against distortion. Antidotes, abandoning, cutting at the root. 3 causes of awakening. Teaching, understanding, everything in favor. 3 degenerations. Doubting the Dharma. Enthusiasm fading, less concern. 3 never to part with. practice and body, speech and mind. Attention to the close ones who provoke you. Don't count on external conditions. Priorities. Practice what's important. Upside down and contrary. Patience for distortion. Aspiring to samsara. Looking wide instead of deep. Pity how hard the path. Be constant in the practice and decisive. Investigate and analyze. No boasting. No striking back. No fickleness. Pure service without wanting thanks. Allowing those words to drop in, some of them will land deeply. Some of them might slide off, that's fine. Some of them may seem confusing, that's fine. Don't worry. Just cherish the ones that have landed. And as we bring the practice to a close, bringing the weight of the body to the foreground of awareness, sense of stability in the body, the rootedness of the bamboo, and yet the pliability, flexibility. Staying open to all and yet grounded and stable. Good. That's the end of the morning session. So, homework, of course, which is to take both this quality of groundedness and presence and this kind of simplicity of awareness, being with experience rather than immediately thinking about experience. Obviously, there will be thoughts, but just noticing this proliferation that we so easily do. And then also being aware of others as being just like oneself. And having that Avalokiteshvara gesture of being, having this sort of central stability, and yet this heart that is able to see our equality with other beings. So many of you will have people around, I would think, in your homes perhaps, so you've got people to practice with. And of course there's that line, attention to the close ones who provoke you. So if you have that in your life in the next few hours, then you can think, great, I've got this object of practice. And we'll come back at 3:30 for a meditation. We'll do a metta bhavana meditation using these approaches. So yeah, look after yourselves and do whatever you need to do, and look forward to seeing you later. Thank you.